Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are enjoying the international break, the mental break from Roma. We will be doing all transfers today, reviewing, reliving the summer transfer market, just to torture ourselves one last time before January. Before we get into that, as always, thank you to all of our wonderful patrons and all of the people who support us, YouTube, social media. If you would like to join the Patreon group chat, and better I stay silent on that one, Andy, you can go to patreon.com/RomaPress and like, subscribe, YouTube for the video version. You know the drill by now. You thought that you could rest with the international break, with the transfer market having been shut, but this is the one last time. This is the summation of the summer. After this, I think we must all come to a unilateral agreement on a moratorium until I would like December, but I know that is probably unrealistic, given that we will have a larger sample size of the team and that January is less than, well, not even, once it becomes 90 days away, that's when everybody seems to amp up the transfer market speculation.
Well, the newspapers are already at it because this morning, for example, there was an article by Corriere dello Sport asking the question, will Nicola Zaleski have his contract renewed? So that, I'm not saying that is purely transfer market stuff, but it's already hinting at some reporter somewhere out there in Rome thinking up these things in September, when the window just closed and everybody's excited for the football to be played, and yet someone, some schmuck, has to go out there and come up with this fascinating question of, will Nicola Zaleski be here a year from now?
Well, if we were looking for a mental break and mental relaxation, certainly that question does neither for anybody. And I mean, just the thought of having to watch Nicola Zaleski for any prolonged period of time beyond this season, that's not healthy for anybody.
We got some hate mail recently for hating too much on Nicola Zaleski because the man has fans. The man also recently lifted Poland to victory over Scotland. He secured two penalties for Poland and scored the third one. So this is a guy who, for Poland, he turns it up a notch. He's feeling it. He's confident. He's comfortable. He's got Robert Lewandowski fanboying for him. And then he goes back to Rome and back into the void of nothingness. So we will not touch upon the future of Nicola Zaleski because the future of Nicola Zaleski is the same as, say, the future of Leonardo Spinazzola at this time last year, where there was a lot of speculation, a lot of questions to be asked, but it was really up to the player to make that decision, up to the player to prove his worth. I think it's the same case with Zaleski right now. Final year of his contract, everything left to prove at his boyhood club, with a manager that clearly is trying to instill confidence in him by giving him playing time, be it as a starter off the bench, but that's about it. I'm not going to go into any more detail about Zaleski. He decided to stay at Roma. He rejected an offer from PSV. He wants to stay. Fine, so be it. We will focus today on the players that left and the players that came. That's it.
Yes, and by the way, this criticism of him after he performs on the international break, during the international break, whilst on international duty with Poland, that is a tale as old as time, where you have players, for some reason, when it comes to the international stage, they go to a different place. They transcend everything. Just in the Azzurri alone, we can find, think of all of the examples. I mean, the number of choices we have just in the Italian national team alone is endless.
And vice versa, because let's remember, yes, for example, Ciro Immobile goes from being the king of exactly. Lazio to being just a ballerina for Italy for many, many, many years.
many, many years. So it is not a rare occurrence. It's not the first time we have seen it. I just think of all of the examples, particularly with attacking players, players who play in the more advanced position, the way they perform on the international stage versus club level. You will find players who can just do it. Whether it be, and I think this is exactly what the issue is, the difference of environment. Clearly the guy presses when he's with Roma. I would say beyond that too, with Poland, Andy, he has a defined role. With Roma, if you say here's the thing. I will just say this one more time for anybody, if they come across the word, if they don't know what the word, no, but listen, hey, for anybody who's new, when they hear you say the word jollies, they don't know what it means, though. They don't know what it means.
They know what it means.
No, but there are some.
Now they know. Jolly, just jolly as in a Swiss Army knife, but which is not true right now, because I think since Daniele De Rossi came in, he's been trying to give Zaleski a more like defined space of activity. Like see when Zaleski plays now under Daniele De Rossi, more or less he knows which area of the pitch to cover. I still think Zaleski's biggest issue right now is just he knows what's at stake at Roma. He knows this club so well. I mean, he grew up in it, you know, whereas the Polish national team to him is like a foreign object. Okay.
You were about to say his biggest issue is he sucks, would be more.
No. I think this is a player who can do well in other contexts. I think at Roma, the pressure gets to him. Okay. There is that. And there is just that liberty that comes with playing for Poland, which for him, again, this is a kid who grew up in Italy. Okay. He's got a Polish last name. He's playing for Poland. But he grew up in Rome, okay? For him, playing for Poland has to feel good. Just has to feel good because there are no expectations on him. There is no mantra, the kind of mantra that persecutes players, homegrown players at Roma, you know, with this idea of, well, he has to represent the badge. He's a Roman soldier, whatever. I mean, all that bull crap. With Zaleski, that just you can see how it deflates him. Whereas with Poland, he's a free man. He's a free man. He can do whatever he wants. Even when he's going to be criticized, he's going to be criticized for what happens on the pitch. Whereas in Rome, he's being criticized basically for failing to meet the expectations that were set for him so high when he made his debut under Mourinho in that first year with the Conference League, where nobody expected him to be the answer. And yet somehow he was the answer for a period of 6 months, you know, kind of like Cengiz Under. But with Cengiz Under, we all realized that period of 6 months was over. We realized that, and his role was limited to a minimum. With Zaleski, unfortunately, we keep on going. But anyway, let's move on with the rest of the show.
Yeah, let's move on.
Please,
but very quickly, you mentioned my man, Cengiz Under. Every time he gets brought up, I feel like when they go to the Undertaker and they take the blanket off of Sonny's body, and my only reaction is, look at what they massacred my boy.
They massacred my boy.
I was all in on him. And
I was all in on him. I thought that was one of the best deals that Monchi had made.
There was about 12 months, straight months of him where going all in on him was a reasonable take. And then
because he hardly played at the beginning. And then once he started playing, he was the answer. Like he was on fire.
Yes.
He was on fire. He solved all of our problems within a span of like 5 to 6 months. And then that was it. That's his career at Roma, basically. literally lightning in a bottle.
Yes. Someone will have to correct me if I'm wrong, but I know he won the match in Veneto against Hellas Verona on his own. And I believe he won a match against Udinese on his own. And those were just two of
I believe also Benevento. I don't want to be potentially Benevento. So there were like those 3 to 4 really tough games against relegation sides that Under single-handedly won for us. And that was it. But there we understood the thing with This is a player who's given us his all. With Zaleski, if we can say something about this summer that stands out like a sore thumb, is that Zaleski had the opportunity to leave. I think Roma could have also benefited from that, from a sale of the rumored fee for Zaleski was something around 10 million euros. That would have been huge for Roma. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out. Now, let's see if Zaleski was right in turning down PSV's offer.
I just looked at how much run Cengiz is getting under old friend Jose Mourinho, and it's not good. So he has not found a fan at Fenerbahce in Jose Mourinho. Well, RIP to him and to his club career. Another one bites the dust, you know, and goes up with the other glorious early predictions I made just to make it seem like I made it to the stock market early and I can cash in. Another one where I lose out on everything.
Okay, what is your stock market prediction for this market?
Let's go to this transfer market. So right now I'll put it up on the screen for those watching. We will run down the list of all the operations from this summer. So obviously the most expensive of them all being Dovbyk. He came from Girona. And then we also had Mattia Sule from Juve, Enzo Lafay, Angelino. We will put him in here simply because technically he did, but as we know, he was on loan. Samuel Tal, Saul Abdulhamid, Matthew Ryan, Manu Kone, and then Alexis Salamakers, and then the two free agent central defenders in Mario Hermoso and Mats Hummels. Now, I thought I may have been even exaggerating when I said a week ago that I believe from top to bottom in Serie A, when I look merely on paper, and I always have to give this forewarning before we do anything transfer or giving any sort of final concrete judgment, okay? And I always use the same analogy. It is right now, what's the day today? The 8th of September, okay? What we say now is based on the facts we have now, which is three matches. We have three matches that we are basing this off on. And what? Half of the guys that we just mentioned in that list have not played yet. Okay? Hermoso, Hummels, Kone played very sparingly against Juve. Okay? What we say now will be completely null and void in January, for better or for worse. Okay? This thing where you're going to play a clip or remind you of a prediction that you made in August, in May, or something like that, when the facts have changed and we have a larger body of work, drives me mad. I will say the same thing. If you met Jeffrey Dahmer, okay, before he went on his little tirade, to put it lightly.
Right, his snack trip.
You didn't know he killed people. You thought he was a nice guy, but guess what?
He liked picnics.
You find out he killed about 2,000 people, and then you say, oh my gosh, well, am I allowed to change my opinion now about him not being a nice guy? Come on, it's common sense. This isn't Twitter, all right? You learn something new, you change your opinion. Jeez.
Yeah.
So now that that's out of the way, I looked again at Serie A from top to bottom. When I look strictly from the standpoint of where I think where I think needs were addressed and improving overall quality, I think Atalanta did the best in Serie A.
Okay.
And then I think Roma are right there behind them.
Mm.
Because guess what? Yes, Inter are better. And I probably have to lay this out too. Inter, of course, are better. But did they improve? Did they make themselves, did they take it to the next level? Did they raise their overall quality? I would say no, but it's still a good team. I am not saying Roma, Atalanta are better than that. I am strictly talking about the transfer market. I know I have to lay that out there too as well, because we will probably get some form of some comments. But when I look, Andy, I thought perhaps I may have been overstating the market of Roma, but I looked again, and I do think only Atalanta did better. And guess what? They've gotten off to a slow start too. I would say the only bad operation they did, if you asked good friend Gian Piero, turns out to be, at least so far, he thinks Nicolo Zaniolo.
Zaniolo, useless, yeah.
Is a bet that they are currently losing.
Yeah.
So that aside, I still think the business they did was superb, particularly from the standpoint of
motivated primarily by the fact that Gianluca Scamacca got injured.
Scamacca.
So
yes.
So that's and I think Juve also did their business well late in the window, but they got, I think, some functional players to Thiago Motta's service. So I think Juve also have to be put there.
For Juve, it felt like they were playing Monopoly in a way where they, you throw money at the problem.
Because they also had their hands tied. You know, we like to think of these big clubs in Italy as, you know, as these untouchable entities. The thing is that everybody's touchable. So Juve have also their hands tied. You know, Milan have their hands tied. Inter have their hands tied. Napoli, who are supposed to revolutionize their squad, and they still failed to do it. Only when the market was closed did they get rid of Osimhen on loan to Galatasaray. So I think everybody faced very similar circumstances. On paper, you find me in agreement in the sense that if I look at which teams programmed this summer, I think the signings that Roma made were functional. You can always question the timeliness because obviously there was that period of time where it was uncertain whether Paulo Dybala was going to leave, where it seemed like everything was at a standstill for about 2 weeks. It felt like we don't know what's going to happen next. And it was a bit of a mix of these planned signings where clearly, you know, Ghisolfi had an eye on the likes of Sangare, Dal. Those were two players that he knew from before and knew that he wanted to target them immediately as soon as he got there. And then there were these reaction signings, these opportunity signings that I think we made the best out of. Because again, I want to highlight it, in today's world of football, and especially in Italy, the transfer market is dictated by opportunity. So it's just like that. A player becomes available, or a team withdraws from the race for another player, or something happens and someone is up for sale, someone whom you didn't expect to be up for sale, you make use of that opportunity. Someone becomes a free agent, you make use of that opportunity. And I think Roma did the best job, or at least one of the better jobs in Italy, to try and align these two portions that go into the work of player selection. So someone like Ghisolfi, who came in June, clearly was facing, I think, a tall task of on the one hand, it was a huge opportunity, the fact that you were getting rid of a lot of players who were on loan. So on one hand, you had the huge opportunity of seeing a new squad, build a new squad, and cut costs. That was a huge opportunity, but there was also a huge room for mistake and also a huge responsibility that came with completing the team. And because starting a revolution is always fascinating in theory, and people are going crazy, you know, whenever there is a season. And like with Roma, we often we come up short, and the fans, even in our patron group chat, they go at it and they say, well, look at it, you know, we should get rid of everybody, start a revolution. Well, it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to do it. It's another thing to carry out a revolution. When it actually comes to doing that, it's complicated. There is a lot of things that you have to take into account. If I look at what Roma have done, they've brought in 12 new players if we include Angelino on a permanent deal. I think all of these 12 signings right now, not only do they indicate a specific direction Roma want to head in terms of costs, sustainability, the profile of the players, because there is a nice balance between young players and experienced ones. As you mentioned, expensive signings, free agents, players like Dal, like Sangare, with promising careers, gotten for cheap. And I think on paper, those look good to me. Those look like they've been finally made by a club that knows where they want to go.
No more stupid loans. That's the first, I have to say, of all the things this summer, beyond keeping Paulo Dybala, beyond Dovbyk, Süle, very high profile signings, can you recall the last summer where they did not make a very, in hindsight, now, Romelu Lukaku, obviously expensive. What the final judgment on that is as to whether or not it worked out, I will leave that to everybody to make. I think you can view it one way or the other. If you look at the actual goal output in Serie A, it was okay. It wasn't impressive, obviously. He was absent for the first,
months? Abraham that we saw in Mourinho's second year.
Well, if that is the standard.
That was the standard. Up until that point, that was the standard. So the job was better than Abraham.
That's fine. So if it worked out or not, everybody can have their individual opinion on the matter. However, on paper, Renato Sanchez, I can see how somebody could talk themselves into something like that. Okay, well, he comes here. He's going to be motivated to prove himself. He's going to get in shape. He's going to make all of these appearances. He wants to make it back.
We were there. We said those things. We said, hey, if there is room for improvement.
but you can talk yourself into it, because when you have a body of work that he has, where you do have the injuries, but when the guy plays, he was good. He was very good. I mean, we cannot forget the things he did when, at such a young age, so early. I mean, the level of quality that he showed. It's understandable that you talk yourself into that. But man, is it nice not to see Roma pull out the loan deal for some guy that...
Well, Thiago Giallo, mind you, Thiago Giallo, with the mention of Thiago Giallo, he was supposed to be coming in on loan. And that's why when I saw Di Marzio was very insistent on that. Thiago Giallo, done deal to Roma. But as soon as I saw not only the profile of a player who hasn't played in a long time, so basically Renato Sanchez 2.0, but also the fact that it was a loan with option to buy, and I thought, but didn't De Rossi and Roma so far make it their priority to get every signing on a permanent basis, someone who's fully committed to the cause, will not be looking to go back to their parent club at the end of the deal?
Yeah, and Salamakers, by the way, because somebody may counter with that. I would say that deal lives in sort of a realm of its own, in the sense that, well, for starters, it was a swap. You give to Milan, Tammy Abraham, and Salamakers comes to Roma. But the thing with the no loans is, to me, it at least shows, as you said, everybody is on the same page here. And also, you're not behaving like the bridesmaid instead of the bride. Stop. I hate this. This is one of the problems I have with just the ambiente Roma in general. This complex of defeatism, so to speak, where, it is almost as if we are okay with, oh, wow, we're lucky to get Renato Sanchez. This is great. We can aim a little higher than that. No, let's have some self-esteem. Yeah,
we can aim a little higher. And that's why you see these signings like Matias Süle. A lot of people want to pass that off as signing as something that happened, of not great importance. But Matias Süle is a big deal. Artem Dovbyk is a big deal in the context that Roma were making this signing. Even the fact that Mario Hermoso, a guy who was being pursued by half of Europe, accepts you in the end. Mats Hummels, his career speaks for himself. Again, a guy whom you got on a one-year deal, so basically on a tryout period, and he accepts it, that has to mean something. Now, again, we will maybe be sitting here next year and somebody will pull up this clip, pull up this video of us, sitting
and
here.
And we look stupid.
Applauding Roma, but it's like that. The market is judged at the beginning and at the end. At the beginning, because you think about the implications for the seasons of a market well done. And then at the end, when you can look back and really get into whether the depth, for example. I really do think, and a lot of people have been saying this, there is more depth this year than ever.
Yes.
It feels like that. It really, when you read the newspapers today and you see that, well, Cristante, he's no longer untouchable. He could be easily replaced by Pizzilli, Kone, or Lefe in the match against Genoa. And I'm like, wow, where did this come from? How did we get here? You know, up until a year or two ago, it didn't matter because the guy had to die on the pitch in order to get out of there.
Yes. Obviously, the depth thing, we always have the disillusion, I should say, of depth. There are times, I can recall so many instances where we say, oh my gosh, now we have depth. And then the season before, and, hey, we have depth now. Two years before, now we have depth. It actually does kind of feel like it now, and I probably have said that before too. But you have it, I would say, across the board, perhaps in every position except striker, maybe. But in attack, I mean, you have Salamakers. You El Shaarawy, a guy who was starting. Look at El Shaarawy, man, in April. In April, the guy goes out, I would say, arguably the most important player of that first leg against Milan at San Siro. He plays an unbelievable match that I will remain adamant. It is not at the level of Alisson versus Atletico Madrid, but it is one or two steps below it in
terms
of
maker. Yeah, difference maker.
Yes.
He's yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you don't even see that guy on any projected starting formations. You don't see that guy
he's
coming off the bench.
He's played 1 minute against.
Yes. Now, I will save the jokes or the any puns related to. I won't bring them up as to what may have happened over summer and what may have changed, but even in that position, a guy that you had in March starting for you, playing crucial minutes, playing every minute. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he play like the full match in both legs against Milan? I could be wrong in talking off my backside, but I could have swore Daniele De Rossi. I'm recalling his press conference where he talked about how, or he discussed the engine of El Shaarawy, and to go from that, to hear the guy lauding El Shaarawy, to now being a complete afterthought. Think that,
but, and not only El Shaarawy, because even someone as central as Dybala, right now he's started on the bench every single time. You know, who would have thought that someone whom we could, and again, obviously you look at three match days, we got 2 points, okay? So obviously, but what we saw is that more and more players can be questioned, and more players will have to fight for their spot in the team, because even someone like Paulo Dybala can stay on the bench. Even someone like Brian Cristante can stay on the bench.
That has been a problem at Roma for decades, where you have players never being questioned, and the club almost being too frightened to bring somebody in because there would even be the slightest appearance of a player being questioned.
Even with players as beloved as Strootman or Nainggolan, but at some point there was not even a questioning if they, even Daniele De Rossi at 36 years of age. You know, there were those moments where you and I would be sitting here and thinking, why are we seeing De Rossi, Strootman, and Nainggolan start if all three of them have run out of gas like 2 months ago? Because very frequently there was this fear that if you bring in someone of equal quality or someone who may threaten the place of a starter, you risk compromising the whole project. And I think that's what's important about this. And that's what I think was also taken into consideration for the recruitment of players this summer, is everybody's touchable. So you have to earn your minutes, right? And if you're coming in from the outside, you will also fight for your minutes. If you're Mario Hermoso, you will have to fight for your minutes. Just like if you're Matias Sule, you're coming off a really exciting season with Frosinone, you have to fight for your minutes.
That is something I am a massive proponent of. And again, something that you even in the fantastic season, Spalletti, Garcia, think about that. I can tell you those starting formations without hesitation, because there was never a question. Oh, well, would I put that guy there, that guy there? No. Remember the season of Spalletti, man? You had two guys off of the bench. Two.
Paredes and El Shaarawy. Yes.
And that was if you were lucky. I'm telling you, they
then
win the
Scudetto. Then we had Clément Grenier, obviously.
Hold on. Now you have... Do you know where he plays now? Is he still in Spain?
He used to be in Mallorca, but I think... I'm not sure. Maybe that was 2 years ago. Time flies.
Oh, gosh. Okay. When the first thing that pops up says without club, usually things do not seem to be going too well. Okay. I will leave that aside then. All right. Well, let's end this then on some of the... Let's talk about some of the markets of the other clubs, more so the big ones. Were you impressed by anybody, or were you, I should say, very surprised that others did close to nothing? I have to tell you, man, Lazio, it's easy to have a go at them as a Roma podcast, but I don't even know what to say.
Lazio are the victims of Claudio Lotito. I mean,
I think most people knew that already, but I mean, to bring in, where you have this very weird thing with your manager, where you had appointed him just some months ago, and then he essentially gets up from his chair and says, "This ain't it for me, chief anymore."
You also suggested a new way of playing. You Maurizio Sarri leaves, Tudor arrives, and there is this whole talk of a new project with youngsters, and then 3 months later, Tudor is out the door, replaced by Baroni, who, mind you, Baroni did an incredible job at Hellas Verona, saving their asses when they were basically liquidating the club. I still don't know how they managed to avoid relegation, but still.
Remember everybody they sold? I mean. Yeah.
In January, they basically overhauled the whole team. He kept them there. But still, to go from Maurizio Sarri to Tudor to Baroni is a downward spiral. I do agree with you that what Lazio have been doing is questionable at best, if not downright suspect, what Claudio Lotito has been getting away with.
This is where we would have to play the clip of Marco Violi doing "Mancano questi, I soldi." One of the best clips ever. I still think I have it on my Twitter somewhere. Yeah. I have to say, some of the others I was confused by, or I should say curious of.
I have to give a special mention to Torino, because they always Cairo is one of the worst owners in Serie A. A man who has kept this team under a very tight leash for many, many years. Investments have been basically none. And he's gotten rid of some of the key players at the worst moments of time. Like, he is so bad at selling players, because he starts from asking a certain price to then all of a sudden just sort of he gives away these players. Like, he goes from asking, you know, 100 million for Belotti to losing him on a free. He goes from asking for, I believe, 30, 35 million for Belanova at the start of the summer to selling him to Atalanta for 22 million plus bonuses. You know, what the hell are you doing, man? And even the new Torino coach, Vanoli, complained about this whole thing, this idea of trying to build a team without actually building it, which seems like it's something that Torino have been doing ever since I started watching Serie A. They've been trying to build a team with no end goal in sight.
I have to laugh, because if you remember, everyone can go Google and try to find the final press conference of Ivan Juric. I mean, this is a guy who was so defeated. I believe he said something along the lines of, I would love to continue here, but there is no more joy. The guy was saying things usually heard at funerals.
He's out of a job for a reason, not because he was bad. I think he actually exceeded expectations at Torino, but just because the toll of working under those circumstances is just too great. It's too great. There is no planning. Torino have been aiming for this Europe spot for I don't know how many years. Every time they seem like they're about to get it, then they go on a terrible run of results. Their best players get sold left and right, and there is no planning for the future. So you have guys like who also don't get the spotlight they deserve. Guys whose quality is being undermined by the same club, like someone like Ricci. Now all of Italy is gloating about Ricci, who recently featured in Italy's win over France. Ricci has been a diamond in the rough, but he's been a diamond in the rough exactly because Torino are terrible at elevating their players, their best players. They're just terrible. They keep them in the dark, locked away in some cellar. They go on for years at a time without making a real, concrete, hopeful investment. And whenever it comes to selling the players, they start off really strong and determined and getting the best price, and then they end up, you know, giving them away for cheap or losing them on a free. So to me, that's Torino are always a mess. This year, they've also been a mess. And I still think that one of the more disappointing clubs so far, just because of who you got as manager, as Napoli. I still think that Napoli, for what the expectations were, you know, you go from winning the Scudetto to finishing 10th, going through three different managers in the season, that just screams a hard reset. Napoli are still out there playing Juan Jesus, okay? They still have Giacomo Raspadori and Matteo Politano playing for them. So where was the revolution? What happened? What's the big, great investment for the future? Getting Romelu Lukaku on a permanent deal? Like, what? You know, getting rid of Osimhen on loan to Galatasaray in a summer where you could have easily sold him for millions, 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 millions to either Chelsea or a Saudi club? Like, what are you doing?
Well, the Lukaku thing is particularly egregious yet also comedic in a way because, Andy, we have known since April that guy was going to Napoli. Yeah, I mean, we've known
for... I don't know what happens with Lukaku. It takes such a long time always to get deals done for him. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And the manner in which they carried that... I mean, to leave it so late the way they did, it was so bizarre. As far as Torino goes, Cairo is a guy I have spoken of on here many, 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 many times. He's someone I have a particular disdain for. I had some unpleasant encounters with him during the whole Petrarca thing, which turned into a mess. He sucks. But really, what would you expect? Because this guy grew up under the tutelage of one Silvio Berlusconi. Okay, so
and he also owns a TV network. So
yes,
those are the similarities. Silvio Berlusconi had Mediaset, and Cairo has La Sette.
Yeah, and he is. You almost have to assume there is some sort of criminal activity going on, and he is using Torino as a means to, you know, I'm not accusing of anything. This is obviously a joke, but he is almost trying to use it as a way to like hide his cash somewhere, much like Lotito might be doing with Lazio, because what they did this summer is beyond the pale of understanding. It is bizarre. As far as some of the other big ones, though, before we leave, Milan.
What Milan? Milan what?
I have
Milan,
to laugh because
Milan,
Uncle
it's a terrible
Paolo,
summer for Milan.
Terrible summer
for Milan, who, again, are sort of, that's the worst thing. That's what you always said, John. You know, you hate mediocrity, you know, those teams in the NBA that sort of drift around.
Yes, it's the Atlanta Hawks syndrome of the NBA.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Hawks syndrome of the NBA.
And right now,
it's right, better to either suck or go for it. That's it.
Yes, exactly. And in Milan, I think they, after Pioli, they had the chance to really get something new going for them. You know, with Antonio Conte, they would have been addressing a lot of issues in the sense that they would have gotten the best out of guys like Rafael Leao, Theo Hernandez, Mike Maignan, guys who have been there a long time and who need a spark under their asses. Otherwise, there's problems. They did not do it. They got Fonseca, who I think did a really good job at Lille. I've always been a fan of Fonseca. I've defended him when he was at Roma. But with Fonseca...
Hold on, that's his level. Let's just agree to that, yeah?
Yeah, it's his level.
Lille is his level.
And Milan had to be realistic about it. Instead, they didn't get the players that Fonseca wanted, because clearly you can't convince me that Alvaro Morata, Emerson Royal are guys that Fonseca is cool with. They're not. I can believe that Fofana is a player that he really wanted. Sure, that's why it took them like 3 months to get him. But aside from that, Milan's window is an abomination in the sense of planning. There is no planning. Jovic was on a 1 year contract. They renew his contract. They give him the number 9 shirt, and then in the final 2 days of the transfer market, they try to sell him. They fail and they exclude him from their UEFA list. Like, what kind of planning is that? You know, and there has been countless of those nonsensical situations are with Milan. You know, they go from Xerxes to Morata. Like, find me a bigger contrast than that. That's huge. You know, they go from Xerxes to Morata to Abraham. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense, especially for a team that after years of a certain type of football being played that under Stefano Pioli, they wanted to go in a different direction. Well, this is... they're not really committed to it. So I have to agree that this is mediocrity in the sense that either you... And it's something that I always fear with Roma. Either you're bold enough to really fail, or you succeed. I don't want any of that middle of the road crap.
I can't stand that. In the sense of, listen, I can put up with crap and shit results if it is something along the lines of, you know, when you bring in that first Luis Enrique, and it is just very clear this season it's going to be shit. Lower your expectations, but maybe we can create a base here in which to build off of.
Right. This is just the start. So bear with us, please.
Yes.
Right. Instead, Zlatan Ibrahimovic said God created Earth in 7 days. Yes. When the journalist asked him, which is bullshit because it means that he doesn't even know that it's 6, and then the 7th day he rested. But anyway, Ibrahimovic
rested on the 7th day. Come
let's not go into that territory of Ibrahimovic's real IQ. But still, the fact of the matter is, there's nothing worse than failing to plan things, especially when you're dealing with financial fair play, which is a reality for every single team in Italy. That's the teams that do not plan suck. That's why I say Inter, their transfer market is very modest. If you look at it, it's really modest. There is only Taremi, Zielinski. They got Palacios on a fee, but Taremi and Zielinski, they had pre-planned those free signings well in advance. But at least they have
well in advance. Zielinski has been there since January.
So yeah, Zielinski has been there.
But really excluding him.
But the thing is, they've kept a consistent line of thought. There hasn't been, haven't steered off their belief that this is the team to succeed. Okay, we're going to use this team. We're going to use these. We're going to use 36-year-old Acerbi to still start for us. We're going to rely on these same guys. Fine. I can trust that. But if like Milan or Napoli, you're sort of juggling so many balls at the same time and not really succeeding or taking risks, then I don't want to see that. Then I have no interest, and I don't think of you as a team that has concrete plans for the future.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more as far as that goes. If the worst place to be in, and I hate to pick on them because this is the club that it seems every summer I just call them out because it makes no sense what they are doing. Look at Fiorentina, Andy. I can't tell you what you are aiming
every
for.
Every single summer, it doesn't matter who's the manager, it's always the same old story. Same old story.
Like they're playing Fanta.
Same old story.
Just to change.
And what's more astonishing is that this year they even changed their hierarchy. They changed some of the members in their management. So you had different people recruiting, no longer Burdisso, Prade with other duties. You know, so all of that, and still with Raffaele Palladino there, and still to sort of make this mismatch of names that then just never translate into anything concrete. Over the years, they've gotten so many names that everybody else wanted. Even Beltran, whom Roma tried to sign a year ago, forgotten. You know, years ago it was Cabral. You know, they got Piontek Cabral for Dusan Vlahovic. What happened to those guys? Gone. Faded away into the wind. You know, like, what's happening? So, yes, Fiorentina is middle of the road. Fiorentina is the worst kind of middle of the road, made even worse by the fact that they've lost two consecutive Conference League finals.
Yes.
But it's like that. That's, in my opinion, Fiorentina is what you risk when you don't take real risks, when you don't dare to be creative, when you don't dare to be consistent and firm in your beliefs as a club.
I can't tell you, when I look at these names that they brought in, I mean, Gosens, Bove, Moise Kean, David De Gea, Gomonsen to me is the only one that somewhat makes sense. Cataldi?
Gudmundsson can't play because he's on trial in Iceland for harassment. So that's not that's not great when that's your marquee signing. I'm just gonna say that that's not a great sign. Also, to address your midfield issues on deadline day by getting Bove and Cataldi, it's like, you know, throwing in a shoe and some glue into a soup when you're just trying to make something work.
Or even Gosens, man. Like, on paper, you would think, oh my gosh, okay, he can reclaim his, refined himself at Fiorentina. That guy hasn't been relevant for obvious reasons, in my opinion. Since he left Atalanta.
Yeah, it feels made up, you know. It feels fake. It feels like Roma aiming for Leonardo Bonucci just to bring in Dean Huijsen. Like,
yes.
What's the idea behind that? What's happening? What are we doing? What is the plan here? That's the thing. Is that as a football fan, I hate that feeling of not knowing what the hell are we doing. If I can at least see a semblance of a plan, then I'm fully on board. But if you serve me this instead of something concrete, something refreshing, then I can't consider myself happy nor enthusiastic.
Yeah, I am right there with you. I even look at some of the others, and I mean, even this thing with Como. Okay, it is. Yes, we got the names.
Isn't that the classic team that wants to make a big bang in the first time in Serie A? We've seen it so many times, even with Salernitana. It's the same thing, you know, underdog that sort of appears out of nowhere, and we have to catch the world by storm. We make some of these signings that are cool for social media, but then on the pitch, Rafael Varane gets hurt and he's not eligible to play in Serie A for the rest of the season or whatever. But anyway, it's the point is, you can't make a football team just by picking names out of a random bag. There has to be some thought put into that. Otherwise, anybody would be competing on any level.
We will leave it there. Back in a few days when Roma, they get back underway. Early game next weekend against Genoa, the early afternoon match. So that will be nice. Hopefully, they can get the first victory of the season. But again, we will be back in a few days to discuss and preview that match and this run. Now the season really begins. So we will chat again very soon. Until then, ciao.